Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. It's on the news every day. Crime rates are escalating exponentially throughout the country. Well, when Ronald Reagan became our 40th president, our country was experiencing the same surge in crime. And in 1980, he said, we need a renewed emphasis on and an enhanced sensitivity to the rights of victims. These rights should be a central concern of those who participate in the criminal justice system. And it is time all of us paid greater heed to the plight of victims. President Reagan literally put crime victims' rights, needs, and concerns on the America agenda of public safety and public health concerns. He established clearly and convincingly that victims' rights are human rights that affect us all. By establishing the President's Task Force on Victims of Crime in 1981, and then taking its final report and recommendations to heart, he created a vital venue that made crime victims' needs and rights a priority for his administration and those that followed it, and for our nation as a whole. So in this podcast, we'll listen to the President's thoughts on crime and criminal justice reform, beginning with a radio address delivered 40 years ago on September 11, 1982. In the second half of the podcast, we'll move forward 5 years. But let's begin in 1982. President was at Camp David to escape from the Beltway. Still, his work was always with him, and he delivered this radio address from the little studio prepared for him at Camp David. Let's listen.
My fellow Americans, today I want to talk with you about a subject that's been very much on my mind, even as we've been busy with budgets, interest rates, and legislation. It's a subject I know you've been thinking about, too. Crime in our society. Many of you have written to me how afraid you are to walk the streets alone at night. We must make America safe again, especially for women and elderly who face so many moments of fear. You have every right to be concerned. We live in the midst of a crime epidemic that took the lives of more than 22,000 people last year and has touched nearly one-third of American households, costing them about $8.8 billion per year in financial losses. During the past decade alone, violent crime rose by nearly 60%. Study after study shows that most serious crimes are the work of a relatively small group of hardened criminals. Let me give you an example. Subway crime in New York City. Transit police there estimate that only 500 habitual criminal offenders are responsible for nearly half the crimes in New York subways last year. It's time to get these hardened criminals off the street and into jail. The primary responsibility for dealing with these career criminals must, of course, rest with local and state authorities. But I want you to know that this administration, even as it has been battling our economic problems, is taking important action on the federal level to fight crime.
At this point, the president begins to explain how he proposes legislatively to take action on crime. Let's listen.
As Attorney General Smith pointed out recently, an important part of the problem is that Americans are losing faith in our courts and our entire legal system. 9 out of 10 Americans believe that the courts in their home areas aren't tough enough on criminals. Another 8 out of 10 Americans believe that our criminal justice system does not deter crime. And these figures have gone up drastically in the last 10 or 15 years. We can and must make improvements in the way our courts deal with crime. The administration-backed omnibus anti-crime bill introduced in the Congress last year and given important leadership by men such as Senator Thurmond would help to achieve this vital goal by cracking down on hardened criminals through important legal reforms. These include revising the bail system so that dangerous offenders and especially big-time drug pushers can be kept off our streets. We also want to stop abuse of the parole system by making jail sentences more certain, and we've been pushing for stronger criminal forfeiture laws, a powerful weapon that would take a lot of the profit out of drug pushing and other forms of organized crime. We've also asked the Congress for tougher federal penalties for drug trafficking. Other important legislation would require a judge to take into account the suffering of the victim when it comes time to sentence a criminal. Would make it a federal crime to kill, kidnap, or assault senior federal officials, and would extend the ability of the federal government to transfer property to the states free of charge for use as prison facilities. These are important and imaginative steps. They can strike a real blow against organized crime and professional criminals. Unfortunately, they have yet to be passed by the Congress. I urge the Congress to act promptly and favorably on these major initiatives against lawlessness in America. Every moment wasted is a moment lost in the war against crime. The day after tomorrow, Monday, I will send to the Congress another package of major anti-crime measures. These will include suggested revisions of the exclusionary rule. Now, this is the rule that can force a judge to throw out of court on the basis of a small technicality an entire case, no matter how guilty the defendant or how heinous the crime. Our bill would stop this grievous miscarriage of justice by allowing evidence to be introduced where the police officer was acting in good faith. This position has already been taken by some enlightened federal judges, and I'm asking the Congress to make it the law of the land. The measures I send to the Congress Monday will also include important revisions of federal procedure that will cut down on interference by federal courts in state criminal proceedings and reduce the great number of cases which now overburden our court system and slow the wheels of justice. And finally, we will press for common sense revisions of the insanity defense, a defense that has been much misinterpreted and abused. I wish there was more time to talk with you about these steps and many others we're taking, such as our national strategy for fighting drug abuse. I'll have to save that for some of our future get-togethers. But in the meantime, I hope we can count on your support in our war on crime and our efforts to protect the innocent and put the professional criminals in jail where they belong. Working together, we can make America safe again for all our people. Till next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
More about President Reagan's stance on crime after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit ReaganFoundation.org/give. That's ReaganFoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the subject of crime and criminal justice reform. In a speech to the International Association of Chiefs of Police, Reagan cautioned, "For all our science and sophistication, for all our justified pride in intellectual accomplishment, we should never forget the jungle is always there waiting to take us over. Police chiefs," he said, "lead the thin blue line that holds back a jungle which threatens to reclaim this clearing we call civilization." And he reminded them that just during the time that you and I are together today, at least one person will be murdered, 9 women will be raped, 67 other Americans will be robbed, 97 will be seriously assaulted, and 389 homes will be burglarized. This will all happen in the next 30 minutes. Well, on that happy note of reality check, let's move forward 5 years as the president proposes new criminal justice reform legislation. Let's listen.
Well, thank you all for coming by, and thank you for a warm welcome. I'm delighted to see you, and I want to make a few remarks this afternoon on the matter of the law and our courts, an area I know is of some interest to you, and as you may have noticed, has been in the news lately. Sometimes people ask me whether I ever weary of the controversy that seems to surround so much of public life, and especially this job. Well, the truth is that more than anything else, the presidency becomes a source of satisfaction if you can look back and see a far distance traveled. In fact, I can recall very well those first few months in office when we were faced with the worst economic mess since the Great Depression, And on the international scene, in some way, things were even worse. Anyway, what I remember most is discovering that after spending a whole campaign talking about the serious problems we faced, I got into office and found out I'd been guilty of understatement. I felt a little like the Titanic passenger John Jacob Astor, who it is reported said when the ship hit the iceberg, "Listen, I asked for ice, but this is ridiculous." Well, things did turn around. We moved from a dead-in-the-water economy to a dynamic, growth-oriented, job-creating expansion that will become the longest in peacetime history. Internationally, we moved from danger and humiliation to new status, not only as a nation of power, but a nation with a sense of right and purpose, strong enough to set the tides running again in the cause of freedom and democracy. And yet, for all the critical economic and international problems we faced, we should not forget that back in the early days, we faced another crisis that was just as grave, one that threatened the very stability and survival of our society. And that crisis was the crisis of crime. Now, I won't list the statistics and recite the horror stories. I think we can all remember the crime rates that steadily escalated, the fear and terror in our streets and neighborhoods, and the undermining of public faith in our legal system and our democratic institution. In my first year in office, I mentioned all of this in a speech to our nation's police chiefs, and I pledged to them and to the nation immediate action. We organized a commission on violent crime that came up with serious reforms that were widely enacted. We added prosecutors and federal agents and moved forward with a massive crackdown on drug trafficking. We singled out the syndicate for extinction and began a war of abolition against the mob. And though it did take 3 years, and though we were forced to remove some important provisions, we did finally get the Comprehensive Control Act, Crime Control Act, of 1984, which was tough, new crime legislation passed by the Congress, including new drug trafficking laws and tougher sentencing procedures. And finally, we appointed judges who understood that the first duty of any civilized society is to protect its honest citizens from those who prey on their innocent fellow citizens. I want you to know we've had results. The number of convictions and average sentences have increased dramatically. In the organized crime area alone, convictions are more than 5 times what they were. I'm proud to tell you, too, that this administration's judges have been shown to be statistically far sterner with criminals than their predecessors. All of this is added up. Only last week, the Department of Justice released a study showing crime was down now for the 5th year in a row and was now at its lowest point in 14 years. Now, some have tried to say that all this progress was the result of demographics. We simply had less people in the crime-prone categories. Well, the truth is that the drop in crime cannot be explained by demographics. Coincidence isn't necessarily cause. Crime has sometimes risen with population growth and sometimes not. There's nothing historically inevitable about it. Between 1977 and 1981, for example, the numbers in the crime-prone age group dropped slightly, but serious crime went up 22%. So let me just point out something that I think is too often overlooked here. The rise in crime was not an unavoidable accident. It didn't just happen. It was the result of a liberal social philosophy that endorsed and supported leniency in the courtroom. A social philosophy that said that society, not the criminal, was to blame for crime. And this leniency in the courtroom itself was the result of another liberal phenomenon, judicial activism. Judges who thought it was their right to make the law, not just interpret it. Judges who fashioned new rules that were a catastrophe for law-abiding citizens. New rules that made it harder to convict even the most hardened and obviously guilty criminals. I've just recently heard of a case that took place that illustrates this type of thing. A man convicted for a heinous crime of violence
and then released out in the streets because he was not brought before the commissioner within 24 hours of arrest. No, he was brought before him in 24 hours and 12 minutes. And so he's out on the street.
Earlier in his administration, the president said that the criminal justice system had broken down. And he emphasized that at the foundation of the criminal justice system must be permanent moral values. He said that we have learned the price of too much government and learned that government bureaucrats not only fail to solve social problems, but also frequently make them worse. And finally, he emphasized that it's time, too, to acknowledge that the solution to the crime problem will not be found in the social worker's files, the psychiatrist's files notes, or the bureaucrat's budget. It is a problem of the human heart, and it is there we must look for the answers. As we all know, it's a very complicated problem that, in the president's view, could best be addressed at the state and local levels. Well, let's hear what he supports to be addressed in the Criminal Justice Reform Act of 1987.
The reason crime has declined is obvious to you and me. As I suggested back in 1981, the American people were fed up. They were tired of judicial systems that were tough on law enforcement officials, but let criminals off easy. They insisted that certain important truths be reasserted, that there's a right and wrong, that individuals are responsible for their actions, and that society has a right to protect itself and the potential victims of crime from those who prey on the innocent. And now, thanks to the American people, and especially to those of you at the state and local level here in this room, we have managed to reject that ugly past. We're making America safe and secure again for our children. But much remains to be done. The task before us in the criminal justice area is the same as the task before us economically and internationally. We have dealt with the crisis, but we must now institutionalize the progress that we've made. We must make our recent gains permanent. Let me speak then to the Criminal Justice Reform Act of 1987 and the three reforms that I am announcing today. These reforms that we were forced to remove from our earlier crime package, but which we will pursue now with renewed vigor. The United States is the only nation in the world with such an expansive exclusionary rule, a rule that rests on the proposition that a law enforcement error, no matter how technical, can be used to justify throwing an entire case out of court, no matter how guilty the defendant or how heinous the crime. The plain consequence of treating the wrongs equally is a grievous miscarriage of justice. The criminal goes free, the officer is uncorrected, and the only ones who really suffer are the people in the community. Just to show how absurd this can become, let me tell you about another case, one that I have mentioned before on similar occasions. This happened when I was governor in California. Two drug enforcement officers in California got a warrant on the basis of evidence that indicated that a married couple in a certain home were in the business of selling heroin. Well, they served their warrant, they went in, they could not find the heroin. And as they were leaving the house, one of them turned back. There was a baby in the crib. And he took the baby's diapers off. And there was the heroin. Case thrown out of court because the baby hadn't given its permission to be searched. Now, the first reform I want to talk about today concerns that exclusionary rule. As you know, the Supreme Court recently recognized that it makes no sense to apply the exclusionary rule when a police officer believes in reasonably good faith that he is acting under a valid warrant, even if the warrant is defective for some reason. My proposal would codify the existing reasonable good faith exception and expand it to warrantless searches and seizures. It would also limit use of statutes to exclude evidence. Those are reasonable and responsible changes, and I urge the Congress to act quickly. It'll make a difference to those of you on the front line. Now, secondly, you all know better than anyone that judicial activists have expanded the federal habeas corpus doctrine to such an extent that it interferes with our primary defense against crime, the state criminal justice systems. Originally meant to safeguard our liberties by preventing the government from holding a person in custody without pressing criminal charges, the habeas corpus doctrine is now misused by federal courts to second-guess valid state criminal convictions. My proposal would reform this doctrine and prevent it from being used as another tool to let guilty criminals off the hook. And finally, I think you all know how strongly the American people feel about restoration of the death penalty. Currently, there are no adequate federal procedures on the death penalty, and so it cannot be used in cases where federal statutes provide for capital punishment. My proposal would establish such adequate procedures so that the death penalty provisions already on the books can be utilized in such cases as espionage, treason, and aggravated murder. Now, as I said, all of these reforms were included in our original crime bill, but we were forced to remove them to get any action at all out of a Congress that locked our crime bill up in committee. While each of these reforms have been passed individually by the Senate in recent years, the House Judiciary Committee has refused at every turn to present them to the floor of the House for a vote. And that's why I urge a full and open debate in the Congress on these critical reforms. If you think that I am a little steamed up about this, I am. I remember in my 8 years in California as governor and the inability to get some crime reforms. And then, in one of the every 2 year elections, there was a certain change in the balance of the legislature. And in a matter of months, 41 anti-crime bills were passed out of committee and passed. None of them were new. All 41 had been buried in the same committee of the legislature and were brought out when there was just a slight change in the balance of that legislature. Well, now, I think I'd better quit talking and get to writing and sign the transmittal messages.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.